This is Professor Allen, and welcome to the Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will often allow a guest to select. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 185th episode of the Quarter Bin Podcast, in celebration of hashtag Western Comics Month, we are looking at one of the longest lasting titles and characters in DC Comics. This is a tale of Jonah Hex, as told in All-Star Western 23 from the New 52 era, cover dated October 2013. But first, a little feedback. Now, last time I talked about some of the issues that I had with the podcast feed, and that my solution to those problems may have brought many old episodes to y'all's devices. Well, that happened to James Williams, but fortunately, he was okay with it. Who has time to listen to new podcasts? One of the old ones that dropped yesterday was from February, so I ended up re-downloading all of your Doctor Who-themed episodes because I haven't heard them in years. Great stuff. Thanks for generating such amazing content. Thank you for your patience and kindness, James. Yes, those are the episodes so nice you can listen to them twice. Shane Kelly, who brought the issue with the feed to my attention, said that this was the first episode he listened to as soon as it came out. Welcome to the team. James followed up, by the way, saying that as someone who worked in IT for a number of years, he said he found the behind-the-scenes stuff at the beginning fascinating. Thank you, James. You were the one. Now, we heard from Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, about his Free Comic Book Day history. Howdy, Professor A. Listening to episode 183 made me think back on past Free Comic Book Days. Prior to my son being adopted, my wife and I would spend the first Saturday of May at our local LCS Mayhem Comics in Ames, Iowa, and get all the books we could, usually a total of 5 each. She would get her 5, just for me. Then my son came from South Korea at 8 months of age in April 2008, and he went with us in May 2008, just 1 month later. You know, Robert, this is important. You got to integrate the kid into those family traditions right away, especially when they involve free stuff. I love that. Robert continues saying that they would continue that tradition until 2018. That was the first year my wife couldn't come due to leukemia. In 2017, she was diagnosed the Friday before FCBD and did not have to report to the hospital until the Monday after, so she came with us. So 2017 was her last trip to the comic book store. And then in 2019, it was the first time I went alone. Peter was in Boy Scouts at the time, and they had a campout that weekend. That was the fewest books I'd gotten in a long while, but I wasn't reading as much by then. This year was the first time since 2019 I went to FCBD, and Peter came with again. It was a different shop because I was out of town that weekend, but luckily we did find a shop. Still, not quite the same as my local LCS, but fun to go to. We picked up the max that we could, which was 4 apiece. Something that happened in the early 2010s, somewhere between 2010 and 2014, a friend of ours, who my wife went to college with, was staying the weekend at our house for a girls' weekend get-together. But since it was FCBD weekend, my wife said that they could both come with Peter and me to the LCS. So there were four of us, each able to get five books, as Peter was old enough for the kiddie books. I would venture to guess that was the maximum amount of books we'd ever gotten. 20 free comic books. I probably still have most of them too, except for some of the kid books. Peter wasn't as gentle then as he is now. But that's okay, he enjoyed them, and that's what matters. So, it sometimes does pay to have multiple people come with you for free stuff. Have a nice day. Thank you, Robert. Great stories. And yes, having family and friends who will indulge us, at least one day per year, is a pretty great thing. I try not to take it for granted, and I'm so glad that you have so many pleasant memories to keep with you. Also, let me give the 21st Century Boys podcast a shout-out. That show is hosted by Sir Iowa's Joe and his son Jack, and they talked about some of their free comic book day acquisitions on their most recent episode. Now, last time, we talked about Thongor, me and Billy D, and on that, we heard from Chris, from Professor Frenzy, It's a Show. Great guest, great host, great discussion, great show. Well, thank you, Chris. I agree with you on almost all of those counts. The notorious JJG Jeremiah Jones Goldstein noted that he has this issue. Love me some Barbarian comics. Also, he linked to a post on his blog, available at comicscomicscomics.blog, under the heading of Awesome Covers. And I have to agree that that one definitely does qualify as awesome. Sir Dr. And wrote in expressing his love for, well, his love for other Barbarian characters. Never read any Thongor. He sounds like a perfectly serviceable Barbarian type. But I would be remiss if I didn't tell both you and Billy to head out and buy the two best Barbarian books from DC that ever hit the shelf. Beowulf and Stalker. Both had short runs, and both are fantastic. But Beowulf, in particular, is a wild ride fueled by testosterone and, I would imagine, psychedelics. And both can usually be found in cheap bins. I beg you to check them out when you can. Well, I can't speak for Billy here, Doc, but I have read a few issues of each of those when I found them for cheap, but they definitely need to be on the app ASAP. And yes, Thongor is definitely serviceable as a Barbarian character. John Baker said that he'd never heard of this character. At first blush, it looks like a Conan ripoff, yet I'm extremely intrigued. Well, John, you know, there's a reason it looked like a Conan ripoff. Social media love for last episode came from Sir Luke Giaconetti, Clinton from The Days of High Adventure, Ed Moore from Teal Productions, John Score, Sir Martin of Grey, Karen from Between the Pages, Chris Lydon 7, Mike Romero, Wacky Comic, Anthony Precante, Chris Williams 93, Bill at Spy Vinyl, Gregory Litchfield, Ancient Zero History, Robert Meyer, Posilia, The Telltale Mind, Dave's Comic Heroes blog, and Vic in Phoenix. Thank you for that support, friends. Time to play a promo here, and when we come back, we'll jump into our hashtag Western Comics Month issue.
You're listening to Prairie Justice, a Greg Sanders Vigilante podcast.
Is an exploration of the DC Comics character, the first superhero to use the name of the Vigilante. First published in Action Comics 42 in September 1941, amid comics' golden age and carried as a continuous feature. During those years, the Vigilante was also a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory and was one of the first DC heroes to appear on the cinema screen in his own serial. Reappearing in the Bronze Age, the Vigilante had a 1970s renaissance throughout the DC universe. Greg Saunders, the Prairie Troubadour, leads a double life as a modern country and western musician, while also delivering justice throughout North America as a masked crime fighter, using the tactics and weapons of his rural Wyoming upbringing. With his friends Billy Gunn and Stuff Leong, many a nefarious scheme was foiled with six guns, ingenuity, a motorcycle, and a twirling lariat. Howdy, I'm Ranger Gord. Help me follow the trail of the Vigilante on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.
And we're back. And by we, I don't just mean myself and my collection of spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle. For no, I am joined by a person whose reputation for irredeemability is known all across time and space. From the Fire and Water Network, it's Shag!
Yay! The irredeemable Shag. Thank you so much for having me, Professor Allen.
Welcome back to the Quarterman. I hope Billy D cleaned up the green room like he said he would. He was the last person in there.
It's a mess, and there's JSA stuff everywhere, but hey, that man, part I didn't mind. I didn't mind that part.
Now, here's the thing. When last we were together,
Like in person or podcasting?
In person.
Oh, gosh.
It was like the entire Middleton clan.
That's right.
We were having such a good and pleasant time watching the sunset over the Pacific. Yeah. Under the palm trees.
And please note, your wife was legally obligated not to be behind a vehicle at any point within 500 feet of me. She did try and kill me one time, dear listener, in
just
a car.
Just once.
And I'm not making this up.
It was just the first time. Then she got to know you.
Right.
So, you know, we're all out there and I'm not sure what happened, but somehow you tricked me into inviting you on the show. Was this all part of your long con? Is that what this was?
That is entirely why I made sure you flew your entire family to Los Angeles and why I flew to Los Angeles just so that I could finagle my way onto your show to talk about Jonah Hex.
It makes perfect sense if you think about it.
Well, I had a plan because, you know, basically, not to spoil ahead, but this comic is pretty much full of just sexy women having sexy sex time. And so I do seem like the ideal guest. I mean, it just seems like that all tracks, right?
See, but here's the problem, because, you know, seriously, and obviously you spent a lot of time branding yourself.
You do know what seriously means, right? I mean, just before you finish that sentence, I just want to make sure you understand how English works.
But Shag, you've spent a lot of time branding yourself, but think about this, finding your joy.
Yes.
Shag's Mac and Cheese Comfort and Joy.
Yes.
This new positive podcast that you have. A few of us have been chatting in the back channels. Bailey, Gutierrez, Jack and Eddie, Crab, Leyland, you know, and we're all worried, like, what's happened to you, man? It's more like the irrepressible Shag.
No. I'm still irredeemable. I'm just enjoying myself being irredeemable. If you don't listen, I still say things like, you know, the ladies are hot or this person's a terrible person. I may not curse as much, but I'm still the same person.
We were worried.
Nothing to fear here, Professor. I promise. I'm still that nasty little pervert who has 18 restraining orders against him.
What's the exchange rate? Florida versus the U.S. in terms of restraining orders. I know there's, I know there's international boundaries you have to deal with there.
But we don't even pay attention to those down here. Those are just like table stakes in any kind of conversation. Like, how many you got? Really? Don't even bother.
Now, I you've pretty much already answered this question, I guess, but, you know, reached out to you, gave you some comics to choose from.
I don't think that's true.
Why
I think
this one? Because you knew it had sexy dames in it? Is that, did you know somehow? And
no, I honestly don't remember the thread that clearly, but I'm pretty sure I wasn't given a choice. I think you just said you wanted me on for this comic, and I said, okay. Maybe you gave me a choice. I don't know, but I don't listen to about 80% of what you say.
I think technically I gave you a choice and you said any of these.
There we go.
I guess okay. I think that's probably how it happens.
So. Well, okay. Westerns are fun. And I'll talk about my background with Westerns in a bit here. And it's number 23. And 23 is my lucky number. So that was kind of, you know, exciting for me. And then again, once I finally read it about 20 minutes ago, all the sexy sex was like, yeah, this is totally for me.
I mean, you've kind of already spoiled this, but 23 was Jonah's lucky number too. As it turns out,
and possibly Dr. Arkham as well.
Hey, we don't know. There's a chance.
True.
There's a chance. So Westerns, where do they fit into your fandoms of movies or TVs or prose novels or comics?
It's not really an area I've delved into that much, you know, because growing up, I read a lot of funny books like Sad Sack. You may have heard of it, and other superhero comic books and things like that. But Western was not a genre I sought out. And as far as like movies go, like the only Westerns I remember watching as a kid were like Silverado, the 1980s Lone Ranger movie, and Back to the Future 3. You know, like, I mean, that's about it. I mean, I don't have anything against Westerns. I just wasn't exposed to them.
That's pretty much my story, other than the Lone Ranger. And that was more on like, I don't know if a PBS station or a station played the old radio shows or if we had them on record or something like that. But I remember listening to The Shadow and The Lone Ranger and those classic, those radio shows. Not old enough to have been listening to them on the radio at the time.
That's debatable, but okay.
But yeah, but it's not a genre I'm all that familiar with. I enjoy it sort of in small doses, I'd say. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've had the opportunity since I was a kid to dive in some, like when Vertigo launched in what, 93 or something like that, you know, I was buying every book they published because I was a grown up. You can't see me doing air quotes on the podcast, but I was a grown up and I was going to buy all these mature comics. Right. And so I bought everything, which included the Jonah Hex series by Tim Truman, which was a Vertigo thing. And I loved it. I thought it was great. Now, again, I had no basis to compare to the original. I don't know if diehard Jonah Hex fans hated it, whatever. But for me, that dark, mature approach, it really appealed to me. Since then, like, you know, as a podcaster, I've read the occasional Western, like, you know, maybe for a digest coverage or something like that, but just not a lot of them. But they're fun. They certainly are.
Yeah, I don't remember that Vertigo series particularly well, but you mentioned Tim Truman and I think Scout. So I think, you know, sort of that could theoretically be a match made in heaven.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I've met Tim Truman. Very nice fellow. Passing that along as well.
Wow. Amazing, amazing artist. Absolutely amazing artist.
Yeah. So again, you know, that's sort of Jonah Hex to me sort of is the exception. I guess I've read a decent amount of his books, you know, different issues of different runs, different creators. He's just a fascinating character. Now, with your... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask. So you said you've read different runs. So Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, they were kind of the showrunners, if you will, for Jonah Hex for a long time. They had the Jonah Hex series that DC published leading up to 2011. Then when the New 52 started, they rebranded as All-Star Western. So were you did you read any of the Palmiotti-Gray stuff?
Hit and miss. We did pick up this New 52 version. But then also just a bit more sort of hit and miss of weird Westerns and All-Star Westerns and some of those reprints of the 70s and 80s tales as well. And now, of course, you with your vast who's who experience.
Yes, sir.
And your familiarity with all of the DC characters. You know, who would you say is your favorite Western character who's
Cinnamon.
Not Cinnamon? How'd you know?
I mean, come on. The hot, sexy redhead? Yeah, it's Cinnamon. In fact, I was so disappointed she wasn't in this issue because I know she was in a couple issues of All-Star Western, which I did seek out a long time ago and read those issues. But the hot, sexy redhead in the white outfit, she's awesome.
And here I thought you were going to say the Trigger Twins. I assume that's okay.
They're not bad. I do love the whole thing with the twins going. I did read a couple issues of that at some point for something. I don't know where, but I did. Now I got to share, since we're talking about the various incarnations of Jonah Hex and All-Star Western, there is, and you mentioned Billy D a minute ago. So there is a tangential JSA connection. Now, if you already know this, I apologize. Just pretend you don't. So for me personally, I love the 1970s All-Star Comics stories that featured the JSA. They were great. Absolutely adored these things. And these are, you know, fantastic Bronze Age stories. They brought the JSA back into prominence. They had their own lead feature in a comic, first time in like 25 years to be the lead. And when they started that All-Star Comics run in the 70s, I think it was like 75 or 76. Anyway, they started with issue 58. The first issue on the shelves was All-Star Comics 58, because that's where the JSA left off in the early 1950s.
Except.
Well, number 50. Right, exactly. So you already knew the story. You were supposed to pretend you didn't. Anyway, so issue 57 was the last issue in like 1951. Well, they just kept they kept publishing the comic. They just changed the name entirely. So issue 57's All-Star Comics with the JSA. Issue 58 comes out. They've now called it All-Star Western. So there are those people out there that had a subscription that, you know, 1 month they get their All-Star Comics with the superheroes, the next month they get All-Star Western with Western. I mean, they must have been furious about that.
Yeah. I want to say there's a creator who has that story, Jim Shooter, or somebody who tells that story of falling in love with the JSA and then getting the All-Star Western switcheroo.
And I thought about that story, but I'll just tell it off the cuff. And if I'm wrong, people write in and blame Alan. I believe it's Roy Thomas. I believe Roy Thomas wrote into those early issues of All-Star Comics and said, "Dear, like Jerry Conway, you owe me two issues of All-Star Comics because my subscription ran for two more issues of All-Star Western." So he wanted the first two issues of the 1970s All-Star Comics for free, which of course he goes on to be, you know, the essentially showrunner of the JSA at DC for years.
Now, in terms of other strange iterations of Jonah Hex, have to mention that all the way back on episode 6 of The Quarterbin, which is coming up on 9 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Not that we're old. In an episode currently available on the Quarterbin Classics feed, we covered the futuristic Hex number 1.
Oh my gosh.
18 issues of Insanity.
That's some crazy stuff. Oh, you know, I did that. That did occur to me to think about that, but I was going to try and look up him meeting Batman and stuff like that. I didn't get a chance, but yeah, that's right. Stiletto, right? Stiletto.
That is correct. Well, let's dive into this one. All-Star Western 23 at a cover price of $2.99, meaning I got this comic at a reasonable enough. Wasn't it $2.99?
I think this was $3.99, and I have a note on this. So it was $3.99. You are wrong, sir.
All-Star Western 23 potentially had a cover price of $3.99 or $2.99, meaning that I got this comic at somewhere between a 91 and 94% markdown, although that's not technically true. Please don't tell Stella, because I actually got this comic for 20% off the market price because it was a subscription. But
how much did you pay then?
Either $3.19 or $2.39. However,
your podcast is a lie, sir.
Betrayal. However, I saw it in a quarter bin a few years later. That makes it count as a quarter book.
This is the biggest instance of gerrymandering you've ever pulled on this show, sir. You've pulled a couple fast ones on people, all right? This one is one of the most egregious. That is, I saw the comic in a quarter bin at one point. That is terrible. Now, I will stand up and say, folks, I got this comic for free because I subscribed to the DC Infinite app. So I have already more than paid for my subscription by reading a gajillion other things. And so this one was just a bonus. So I am the true representative of the fiscal responsible people on this podcast.
That is wrong on so many levels.
And my grammar was pretty poor too.
And yes, it did take a while, but you were among those voices telling me what a good deal the app was. And that's actually how I read this particular version. So this whole episode is built on lie after lie after
the podcast of smoke and mirrors, my friends.
I mean, I guess thanks, because, you know, you helped encourage the DC app among the Middleton clan.
It's absolutely wonderful. I love the Marvel app, but it was just a holding action until the DC one loaded all their books. Once the DC books loaded everything in there, I'm like, oh, this is where I need to live. You know, 25,000 comics. Yes, please, more.
Now, this is the New 52 era, so beyond the Firestorm and Aquaman titles, which were the crux of the Fire and Water Network. What other New 52 titles did you sample, did you stick with, or even do you have pleasant memories of?
I sampled a lot of them. I did not sample All-Star Western, I'm ashamed to say. But I sampled a lot. The ones, and there's a lot I won't mention that I did not stick with. The ones I remember sticking with the longest were obviously Aquaman and Firestorm, but also The Flash. I stuck with Justice League, not because it was good, but because it was Justice League. I stuck with the Superman books. And
not because they were good, but because they were the Superman books.
Well, the Grant Morrison stuff was interesting, at least for a little while. And then I'm blanking, but I stuck with a few. Like Teen Titans was absolutely terrible. Hawkman came and went. I remember enjoying the Deathstroke book. That's about all I can remember, man. Yeah.
I mean, we started with a good number, but
you were into Wonder Woman, I seem to recall. You were really positive on that.
Yep. But it was the offbeat titles that we stuck with the longest, and that included All-Star Western.
Okay.
And Demon Knights, which was, of course, written by my good friend Paul Cornell, who I've had dinner with.
Have you really? How fascinating.
I did not know if you were aware of that.
I wonder who else might have been at that table at that time. And I think I'm the one who called Paul to the table. But anyway.
I mean, I have no memory of you being there. I only had eyes for Cornell.
So that's understandable.
Whoever may have been there or not been there. Let's just move on. Okay.
Well, I was going to pay you a compliment, but okay, cool. I can dodge that. Oh, now you want me to give you the compliment.
What was the compliment going to be?
I listened to one of your silly little podcasts about Demon Knights, and then went and not only on your recommendation read it, in the spirit of the Quarterbin, I read them from the library. And they were excellent. They were excellent.
I know you don't hear this a lot, but I love you, Shay.
Aw, I love you too.
Just saying.
That is the first time I've heard it in a decade, so that's nice. I saw a Demon Knights Etrigan action figure in Books a Million the other day. It's specifically Demon Knights Etrigan. It was wild.
Sweet. So moving on.
Yes, we should.
The cover of this issue is by Howard Porter and shows Jonah firing a couple of guns off the page.
I would have never guessed that's Howard Porter.
That's
Yeah,
that's
you're right. I see the signature. Wow. Yep.
And he's got a red tinted city behind him, which always worries us. And the sign says, "Welcome to Gotham City." So other than not thinking it was Howard Porter, what do we think of the cover?
Well, you got to point out, it's not just a city behind. It is a 21st century Gotham City. You see skyscrapers electrical wires, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So yes, the red skies definitely make me think of Crisis, but I think it's a great cover. I mean, he looks really great. A lot of it is down to the coloring. Not to take anything away from Howard Porter, but the coloring is really exceptional. Like, look at his coat. You can see that, like, there's highlights of yellow, and the guns flaring have, like, the little explosion actions. I mean, those look great. But yeah, having him sort of in the foreground on the right-hand side, allowing you to focus on him, but yet, truthfully, my eye's drawn to the background more. Either way, I think it's a nice composition.
Anytime you see a red sky, you have to ask, is there something meaningful behind that?
Yep.
We're not talking full-blown crisis here, but spoilers, we do have a little bit of time shenanigans. So, you could argue that's a reasonable.
And multiple lead DC properties appear in this book, not just Jonah Hex, but another particular character. Ooh.
Our story, Man Out of Time, was written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti with art by Moritat. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'll note that the following synopsis was based on one I found at the DC Wikia, adapted and expanded for purposes of this podcast. So we start in Gotham City now, in the Batcave. Batman's been looking into a series of strange occurrences regarding a man wearing a Confederate uniform using a pair of 19th century pistols to very precisely shoot and kill several mutant gang members. And that is a sentence that only makes sense because of comic books. though all accounts show Hex to have died more than 100 years ago, this newcomer has knowledge that no one else could know, that Jonah Hex owned a stake in the old Wayne Casino. So now this man is on the loose, having escaped from Arkham Asylum, and he seems to have kidnapped Dr. Jeremiah Arkham. So on the road, this buddy team of Hex and Arkham are on the lam, with Arkham really being a buzzkill about Hex, like shooting people in cold blood, and police definitely coming after them. The world that Jonah knew has dramatically changed, and Hex ain't all that pleased about it. Unfortunately, time travel has not yet been invented, and Booster Gold is nowhere to be found. He may not even be in the same time anymore. Now, Arkham, he's more or less believing Jonah's story at this point, but tells him that he has to face the facts that you are now part of the 21st century. And Arkham is really pressuring Hex to make sure he doesn't get caught, would like Hex to come back to the asylum with him. Jonah drags the doctor to a bar instead, where they are mocked by some young punk hooligans. The goth girl bartender warns them off, but she's too late to stop Jonah from starting an all-out brawl. And after he knocks all of them unconscious, the bartender is impressed. And swigging from his bottle, Jonah remarks that if she takes him back to her place, he'll really impress her. And, you know, Shaq, here's the problem. To me, this is a big issue in society. Gals always go for the bad boys. It ain't good. It ain't right.
If it weren't the case, I would have never got married. Be thankful.
Okay. Okay. And this, you know, situation leaves Dr. Jeremiah stuck in the living room with the bartender's roommate while the bartender and Jonah enjoy each other's company. Arkham sees no reason to not tell her exactly the truth about Jonah and the time travel and their escape from the asylum. The fact that they're fugitives arouses the smoking hot redhead, and Jeremiah isn't sure how to respond, though. No comment. No comment, Shag. No comment.
I'm behaving myself. I'm looking at the art, quite frankly. Are you still talking? I lost track of the time.
Now, she also has a hilarious line about her roommate, the bartender, going for Jonah after Jeremiah explains the whole time travel thing. My roommate's into older guys. Now, if this were any other podcast, that panel would earn a Wahaha award.
Yes, it would.
Can we give it an honorary?
Absolutely. I'm on board with that. I am absolutely on board with that. Booster got mentioned in the issue. So, I mean, you know, you're halfway there.
This is a win-win. And after they, you know, whatever they did, the bartender.
Okay. There's no question. They straight up said, if I may quote, my roommate is having sex with the mental patient that kidnapped you. Either that or she's in the next room having a religious experience. I mean, this is not a typical kids DC comic. I mean, they are really pushing the boundaries here. You have to wonder if Palmiotti wasn't such good friends with Dan DiDio at the time, could he got away with this?
Now, she wants to know whether Jonah really believes he's from the past or is from the past, or if he's just crazy. He admits that many have called him crazy, but he is from the past. And even so, he sees little difference between now and then, besides the noise and the increased population. There's still bad people out there. And given that, regardless of what time he's living in, he'll be happy for a good drink, a good horse, and a willing woman. And the rest of the world be damned. Now, a few pages later, Joan admits he's not really in favor of gay marriage. But that's only because he's not really in favor of any kind of marriage. This kooky quartet head to a chop shop so they can get a car that the police won't be looking for, a nice nondescript van that the Scooby Gang could be proud of. Afterwards, they pass a march in support of breast cancer research and awareness. Jonah's kind of confused by all this, and the bartender reveals that her mother died of the disease. Jonah expresses his condolences like a good gentleman, and she thinks he's sweet. And the bartender finally introduces herself as Gina and kisses him on the cheek. How about that?
Well, I'm a little biased because, you know, she's an incredibly sexy woman, and she also happens to share the name with my wife, who's also incredibly sexy. So it's, you know, anyway.
and you look a little like Jonah Hex. It's a
wow.
What?
How did I not even see the setup for that coming? I feel like I just got run over by that Scooby-Doo van. Oh my gosh.
So as they head towards the restaurant, Gina remembers she forgot her cigarettes, heads back for them, only to get nearly run over by a speeding car that has crashed through the this charity event right through the home base of this march that's been organized. Gina leaps out of the way, but Jonah sees that people are hurt and people are scared, and his personal arsenal is missing. But thanks to the magic of plot and probably the Gotham City geography, a gun store just happens to be nearby. I've got a feeling that might be the case in many parts of Gotham City.
That tracks. That makes sense.
Arkham warns him, though, that the police are going to be there soon. You know, this is probably not what you want to be doing. But being a gentleman and a bit of a hero, Jonah knows there's no time to wait. The sympathetic gun store owner hands Jonah a rifle, and the two of them decide to take out that son of a bitch. The maniac in the car is looking for revenge for his wife's plan to divorce him. Angrily, Jonah challenges him, and within seconds, the madman has a bullet through his head, thanks to one of the good guys with a gun. While the gun shop owner marvels at Hex's marksmanship, Jonah says that they got to help them people. Before long, the police arrive on the scene and Jonah is surrounded. And after he's arrested, there is an argument about whether he's a hero or not, stopping a man who prepared to kill dozens of cancer survivors and their families, or if he's a kidnapper and a mass murderer. And as the GIF says, why not both? The discussion is interrupted on the last page by an impressive looking fella in a suit and an entourage behind him. Bruce Wayne, I'll be providing impressive legal representation for Mr. Hex.
Da, 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 da.
The end. The only time Jonah Hex has ever been called Mr. Hex. I've just got a feeling. So before digging into details.
Yes.
Big picture thoughts on the story, on the issue.
Oh, it's interesting, you know, especially being dropped in the middle of it. Because, you know, this is clearly the middle chapter of, I don't know, a three-part maybe story or something like that. And not having read either part on either side, you know, I can only judge it on the merits of what I've got here. There's a lot of fun stuff in here. The time travel, displaced thing. The biggest thing that I started thinking about with this is, you know, what is it like having Jonah Hex displaced in time? You know, is that still a Jonah Hex story? And I realized when I really started breaking it down, and I'm going to assume you didn't realize this because I'm so much smarter than you and more literary. The Western tropes are almost all still there.
Yeah.
You know, he's a stranger in a town where no one knows him. He ends up romantically entangled with the woman from the saloon. You know, the car is their trusty steed. There's shootouts. You know, he takes down the vile bandit. The cavalry arrives. They even declare that. They even say the cavalry's arrived. And in the end, he's in trouble with the local lawman.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely still got all of the tropes of a Western. And I'm like, oh, once I kind of put that together, I'm like, this absolutely works.
Yeah. More than the Hex series did. It veered away from some of those things.
You think?
On occasion. On occasion. I liked it. You know, the issue in a sense, it tells a full story. I mean, at least there's a resolution to that main action scene.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so you're not on a like an action cliffhanger.
Right.
But then also we obviously have this ongoing story or a couple of ongoing stories, you know, Jonah in the current day, and then this dramatic impulse to read the next issue, you know, with what's going to happen with Bruce Wayne. So I think there's some successful plotting and storytelling, you know, in that sense.
Well, I think as I recall from, and this is just from what I've read, and I had a friend who was very passionate about the Palmiotti Gray, Joan Hex stuff. The previous series was all one shots.
Right.
And where this series is more continued, but maybe this is an effort to still, like you said, tell a complete story for a reader within that issue. In an era of decompressed storytelling, this was nice.
Right. I mean, the storyline, it falls into that very common concept. The title of the story is Man Out of Time.
Right.
Right. I mean, they're not hiding that's the theme here. And I thought there was a nice discussion of the things that have changed.
Yep.
You know, in the 150 or so years.
I liked how they addressed the gay marriage stuff. I felt like that was, I thought that was very mature sort of to say, you know, he's not opposed to it. He just doesn't really have an opinion. Doesn't care. And then also it felt a little like for me reading it in 2022, a little scary foresight there of a car driving through large crowds.
Yeah,
of
we've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. And just a little too real for a minute there.
Yep. Yep. And I like the discussion of the societal changes, both positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's not that there are some things that, you know, to Jonah's eyes are depressingly the same.
Yeah. And that was interesting to hear his perspective because, we sit here and think we are so much more advanced. And they point out all these things. You know, people still die just because they look different. You know, things like wow, yeah, a lot has not changed.
Greed and disease and evil and, you know.
So I got a question for you. How do you feel about Jonah in Gotham City? Now, I know in the All-Star Western series, most of it, he was in the Gotham City of the 1880s. Right. But here you've got him in, you know, 2020 or 13. How do you feel about him in Gotham City?
I mean, obviously, it's a attempt in the new 52 just to hang some sort of familiarity on him in one way or the other. And probably as soon as you decide to put him in Gotham of the 1880s, the Gotham of the 2010s is probably always out there as an option.
Sure.
You know, as a possibility. And as we said, Jonah does have a history of jumping into the future.
Yes.
You know, and whether that's a direct X reference or it's just, you know, with this guy, we've done it before, so why not try it again?
Yeah.
Like you said, part of it, you know, part of the trope is going from town to town.
Mm-hmm.
You lose a little bit of that when, I mean, you lose a lot of that when you're, you lose all of that when you're tied down to one location. But tying him into Arkham and you know, giving him, in essence, a sidekick who was with him for a lot of the series was an interesting take. I didn't mind it. It can easily be dismissed or criticized as just another Batman.
Sure.
We got to squeeze Batman into every story possible in whatever way we can. So it certainly is ripe for that, you know, that particular criticism.
Well, I do think what a positive out of it is, you know, with the launch of the new 52, got a lot of eyes on a lot of titles all at one time. Right. And by putting it in Gotham, it probably got a lot more eyes on it than it would have just by calling it Jonah Hex. So I think that was a positive, you know, raising that. The flip side is, do we need another Batman book? Absolutely. And I do wonder, across all the continuities, you know, with whatever version of whatever Earth or whatever media, how many times has Batman met Jonah Hex now? Like, I'm not even sure in this story if Batman's met him before or not, or if he's just reading about him historically. I'm not sure.
How many times have they met for the first time? Yeah.
Right, exactly. I do wonder about that because I know they've met a lot.
I like the characterization of the two gals, the roommates. You know, they're minor characters. You learn a little bit about each one. They have some different personalities. I mean, they have different hair colors.
There you go. Did you see the posters on Gina's wall?
No.
She has, it's just various, it looks like musical groups or whatever, but she's got one for Monsieur Malat, which is like, what? He's a terrorist, essentially. You know, what is that about? Unless someone named a rock band after, but you can see there's an image of him holding
That's
the brain.
That's hilarious.
Too
funny. Oh, my Lance. Yep. Palmiotti and Gray are longtime comic veterans. They've been writing this character at this point for, 10 years or something like that, or six, 7, 8 years. So they know what they're doing with the character. I mean, it's nice to, you sort of feel like you're in safe hands.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's actually maybe another reason that Gotham became a setting was because let's do something new. We've been writing the character this long. Let's do something different. And it really, it's only like a 3-year period. It's as you said, easily dismissed. If someone didn't like it, they go, it didn't last very long.
Right. One of the things I enjoyed about this run of All-Star Western was the art by Moritat.
Mm-hmm.
I simply do not have any vocabulary to properly describe how it's different, why I like it, but I do like it. It seems clearly comic book art.
Yes.
Like it's not trying to be photorealistic. It's not trying to give you this is what these situations would actually be like or look like. It looks like a comic book.
I will do my best to describe some of it. It starts off very, very scratchy. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Right. It reminds me a little bit of early Mark Teixeira work. Mm-hmm. Mark Teixeira had a real scratchy style, but it was also very dynamic, very exciting. And I feel like there's a lot of that here. And I know, as I reread the issue, I noticed something that the art makes a dramatic change the moment the women enter the page. Suddenly, because before it was a little rough, you know, the characters weren't fully defined. It was more like you get the spirit of the character with some lines. Once the girls enter the story, the girls are completely rendered. They are drawn very clearly. They're drawn very cartoony. They're drawn, and I don't mean cartoony in a bad way. Just it's very sexy. I mean, very sexy. And it just seems like the artist was really, really like to draw the women. And that's what he was going for. In fact, his women look completely different from his men. The women don't remind me of Mark Teixeira. They remind me of Sean McManus. Sean McManus could draw beautiful women, like the eyes, the darkness around the eyes, right. The shape of the eyes, the shape of the face, the body. I mean, Gina's quite fetching.
There's a scene when it's when they're getting the van and she's negotiating.
Yes.
With the,
and I know exactly the scene.
Her legs must be 80% of her body.
Yes.
Are her legs.
She looks very purposely like a Barbie doll at that point with black hair. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely intended to attract the eye. So I could see why people hung around. I could see why you hung around the book, Alan.
Hey now. Hey now.
I am irredeemable. See? Now, I did like also the roommate. I just got a quote her. She says, Animal Man is pretty hot. So Animal Man. That makes me very happy.
Now, one last thing I wanted to point out has nothing to do with the story, but it is something that caught my attention. This is on, I think, the next to last page where Arkham is talking to the detectives.
Yes.
And he refers to them by name
as Detective Dunning and Detective Kruger.
Okay. And
the rule is, everyone knows this, when a one-off character is given a name,
okay,
it means something.
Yeah.
Often an inside joke. Mm-hmm. Often it's, you know, someone in the back office at the comic book company, or it's the letter or second grade teacher.
Right? I mean, it's something, right.
A reference that it's often something. Now, in this case, the names rung a bell, and it is a reference to the psychological situation called the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Really?
And the notion is that people with a limited amount of knowledge or skill in a particular area will often overstate their own knowledge or competence.
Oh, like what we're doing right now.
Exact. What? it's the failure to recognize your own, you know, weaknesses.
Wow.
In an area. And do you remember, it was in the news, a study 5, 6, 7 years ago, something. I'm going to make up the details, but the underlying elements are true, where researchers gave a test to students around the world.
Okay.
That was like geography or math, you know, something that was universally applied, and included in the test was a question for the students to judge or estimate how well they did on the test. And basically, you know, U.S. students finished something like, you know, 18th out of 20th, but number one on how they thought they did.
Right.
That would be the Dunning-Kruger effect.
That is fascinating.
So I don't know what the intention of that reference is. I don't know, but
well, these detectives do assume that they know the whole situation, and they're telling Arkham just basically to pipe down.
Yeah, they're telling the psychologist.
Right.
Right. I mean, this is a psychological effect. So, yeah.
Well, they do kind of hang a lantern on to some extent by specifically mentioning Stockholm Syndrome. They've already kind of got you thinking about mental, you know, not disorders, but mental situations or our diagnoses.
So let that be a lesson. Don't let names just go by. There might be something there.
I would irredeemably agree with that. So I got to give a little bit in before we finish the book, just some positives about Jonah. Like, I liked how throughout the issue, he's completely committed to helping people. You know, you get that whole two-page spread of helping the victims. You never see the heroes helping the victims after it's over, right? I also thought it was interesting how they never took him out of the Confederate uniform outfit. And in this day and age, you would. But you know what? They didn't take him out of it in the West. So why would, and that was out of place even then. So why take him out of it now? Works quite well. And then the shootout, did you think that was Wild Dog at any point when he killed the guy who drove through the crowd? Because it sure looked like Wild Dog to me.
It could have been, exactly.
Sorry, Jay. And to answer the question earlier about why this book was $3.99, not $2.99, sir, is because you get 30 pages of art in this one versus the typical 22 that you were getting with the other book. So that's why you're paying the extra dollar.
And well worth it.
And as you paid an extra dollar,
that even Alan, made it a bigger discount when I saw it in the 25-cent bin and could theoretically have purchased it then, therefore qualifying it as a quarter book. Case closed. I paid too much for the mic to drop it, but boom.
You do understand it's an election year, right? I mean, just this kind of stuff is going to come back to haunt you in the November elections. I'm just saying, when you run for head of the Quarterman podcast again, Stella's going to have an edge on you.
That is probably true. Probably too. And, you know, she'll fight dirty.
That's true. She will. See, earlier when I said I have one more thing to say before we wrap up, that was kind of your indicator that that was my last thing. See how podcasting works?
I'm not all so sure. You said one, two, I'm not sure about your counting skills.
Hey now.
Well, all right, Mr. Irredeemable, if that's who you really are. It all comes down to this. And as the guest, we start with you. The verdict on All-Star Western 23, was this worth $3.19?
No.
Was this worth a quarter?
Yes, it was absolutely worth a quarter. It was even worth the no amount of money I paid to read on the app. But yes, it's absolutely worth a quarter. Even in a 50 cent bin, I would say this is still a find.
Ooh.
Well, I didn't say dollar bin.
Ooh, that's a relief. Agreed. Solid story. It's a good take on Jonah Hex in the modern world. Good hook into the next issue. Couple of pretty dames.
Oh, yeah.
That makes it a quarter bin deal. Exactly. Shag, thank you so much for joining me on the show. That wasn't so bad.
You know, I'm glad I got my vaccinations before we did this. I feel like I'm going to come through okay. I don't think I'm going to have a fever afterwards. But no, this was fun. It was a very enjoyable. Thank you so much, Professor Allen. I appreciate you having me.
So tell us where our lovely listeners can find more of your podcasting work.
Absolutely. You can find pretty much everything I do over on the Firewater Podcast Network. Primarily, I'm on shows such as the Justice League International Bwahaha podcast and Once Upon a Geek. In both of those shows, I am diving into things that I absolutely love and finding my joy in every episode. Then you can also find me, of course, with my partner Rob on things like Justice Society Presents and Who's Who and Fire and Water and Digest Cast and a lot of other shows out there. So all on the Firewater Podcast Network.
In terms of the network, just to clarify, the fire part refers to Bob Dylan and the water is Cheers. Is that right? I'm not
something like that. Something like that. Yeah.
Seeing that connection. Okay. Whatever. You're the marketing guy.
That is exactly right. Well done. You saw through all of it. Perfect.
Again, good to talk to you.
Wonderful to talk to you, sir. It's been a while and it's always a pleasure to catch up.
So that wraps up our coverage of All-Star Western 23, bringing episode 185 to a close. I know, it's a big number.
185?
It's a big number.
I've listened to too many hours of you. Oh my gosh.
We are closing in on $50 worth of comics covered on this show.
I'm just more concerned with how much time I've wasted with my life listening to you. Oh my gosh.
Remember that love you shag part from about 20 minutes ago? We could just cancel that out.
Sure. Take it right out.
Listeners, retroactively delete that. Okay.
Comics are all about the retcons.
Next month for August, that is Jack Kirby month, is that Woo-hoo! Month contains the King's birthday. But I'm pretty sure I've already covered all the Jack Kirby quarter books that I have. So time will tell as to what we are going to do next time. We may just end up jumping to September for the next quarter bin. And if that happens, that episode will be Camelot 3000 issues 1 and 2 for Fantasy Comics Month.
Wow. Did you pay like $8 a piece for those?
25 cents. I saw them.
Oh!
25 cents each.
Your life is a lie.
I am almost positive that the first time you and I hung out, I think you or someone in our crew bought a Camelot 3000 trade.
I have one.
Books for $3.99 or $6.99 or
I'll find out. Hold on.
Something like that.
Well, there's no half price book sticker on it, okay. But it may have come from there.
You or someone, or at least we saw one there. So I always connect that to you.
We have totally digressed, folks. Hopefully he'll just edit all this out. But I have so many happy memories of going to half price books with you and buying Star Trek hardcovers. First time I'd ever seen some of those. Oh, such a good time.
Issues of Fate.
Yes. Yes.
I think both. It's a 4-issue and a 5-issue miniseries or something like that. I think I nabbed them both.
Did I buy you the Golden Age or did I buy you Dr. Fate? I can't remember.
You bought me Dr. Fate.
Okay. Gotcha.
So technically I paid zero for those.
There you go. Exactly.
So perfect.
End of the episode already. People are tired of hearing me.
If you have any questions or comments about this issue, the episode, Western Comics, Jonah Hex, my choice in guests, or the podcast in general, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter or 33 cents, or, you know, we try to be flexible and open-minded here. Bin.
The Quarter Bin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening.